You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
25 minutes after 11, we're talking today about family interventions. I want to know your stories. We also have a clinical psychologist, Jeannie Cavey. I'm going to introduce her in a second. If you've got questions, you want advice, or just really pool what has worked, what hasn't worked in trying to deal with a family crisis or someone who is in need of some sort of help, who perhaps is going through some other trouble. And it may be a range of these. Many of us have complex, we all do, complex, interesting, difficult family lives, and family members who sometimes go through a rough patch. 011-883-0702. That's our number here in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Jeannie, thank you so much for coming to the studio. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm not so sure where we're going to start with this one, but it was interesting to me when my team proposed that we focus on family interventions, that the first thing that it solicited was a bit of laughter between us as a team. And the reason is that so many of us have examples of family interventions. You know, you have a funeral at home or you have a wedding at home and everything is jovial. But before everyone goes their different directions from wherever they come from in the country, they might decide it's time for a family intervention with Eusebius. You know, he's been smoking way too much marijuana, or he must stop being with boys. And so the matriarch, you know, might be called to sit him down. And what I've realized from looking at some of the preliminary insights that you've given us on paper is that actually this is not a frivolous issue. It's very, very important. So where do we even begin to think about this?
Well, the first question I'd ask is, in all these stories, did anybody have a story of one that actually worked? My clinical opinion is that family interventions in the way that you've described them don't really work, because the person in question, the person with the problematic behavior, ends up feeling ambushed. And this elicits defensiveness and isolation. And what we know is that isolation and anxiety go hand in hand, and problematic behavior and anxiety go hand in hand. So inadvertently, the very intention of stopping the problematic behavior might foster it. So the solution becomes the problem. I'm not saying that working together as a family doesn't work. That certainly does work. But the approach has to be handled in a very different way, other than ambushing the person or confronting them about their problematic behavior.
And I think often you're right, and I've never thought about it as deeply as you have. Obviously, you, the clinical psychologist, there is often ambushing, even if it comes from a place of genuine love and care. If someone has been suffering with alcoholism for a while, if there's someone who, on a more minor end of the intervention scale in our communities, perhaps is just seen as, here is the son-in-law who really treats very badly the children that our daughter brought into his marriage. It might well be that the family intervening without a mediator can come from a genuine place of wanting to problem solve.
100%.
But I think we don't often think, do we, about the skill sets we don't have that you might have as an expert coming into that conversation.
100%. Obviously, the intention is definitely noble and definitely to help the person and help the family system. But like I say, sometimes the solution can become the problem. So what I'd like to say about that is, you know, that adage, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. You know that one? I often say that in therapy. If you have to ask somebody to change their problematic behavior, they're not going to do it. If a person can't see that their behavior is a problem in and of themselves, they're not going to be motivated to change it. Unfortunately, a person has to want to change. There has to be some motivation for the person, some driving force from within themselves that will benefit them to change. And sure, we give each other feedback. That's how we get to know ourselves. We know ourselves through the feedback in our relationships. But anytime you have to tell a person, your behavior is such a problem that we have been talking about it behind your back and gathering to give you this feedback, the person is not ready to hear it.
If you're listening to this conversation, I wonder whether a family intervention has ever worked for you. I'm as curious as Jeannie. I'd like you to share those stories. But equally, if you want professional help, we've got about 30 minutes with Jeannie as a clinical psychologist, and she will do her best to help a scenario you might find yourself in. There's no shame in reaching out for professional help, mediation, and sometimes as families, we don't have the resources, and even if we literally have them, materially, we may be psychologically and socially too close to the issue to be able to navigate it appropriately. So do give us a call throughout on 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Jeannie, the question I'm going to ask you next is, you know, it's so interesting to me. I've never really thought much about and don't know anything about family therapy and family as a group having a mediator, because to the extent that some of us stereotype your profession, we see it as me as the individual on Jeannie's couch. So on the other side of the news headlines, I want us to talk about the kind of environment you can allow for where the entire family can be treated as a unit and you're not just dealing with an individual.
I look forward to it.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
We're focusing on family interventions. Do you need any assistance? Perhaps you're dealing with a difficulty in your family, someone that perhaps needs help, and you don't have all of the resources. Our guest today is Jeannie Cave. Jeannie is a clinical psychologist. Give us a call. We're talking about family interventions. Jeannie, before I go to the lines, I dropped in the word shame, and you said to me there during the break, you'd just like to reflect a little bit on shame.
100%. It's such an important word. And there's a wonderful speaker, author, writer. Her name is Brené Brown, and she does a lot of wonderful work on the topic of shame. And I was actually reading some of her work last night, and she said people don't like to hear that she's a shame researcher because people inherently feel very uncomfortable with the topic of shame. And she does YouTube talks and she does TED talks as well. And what she writes is that actually each of us believes that there's something inherently shameful about each of us. And we don't want other people to see what's so shameful about us. So we hide behind strategies like alcoholism, other substance abuse, ineffective patterns in relationships, because we don't want other people to see what's so shameful about us. And these behaviors themselves are what elicit shame. So when you go about a family intervention, you confront a person, you actually elicit shame, which is the very driving force behind the person's problematic behavior in the first place.
Mm. So what are the kinds of environments that you can provide or your profession where the family can deal with it? Because for me, what's interesting about family interventions is that, yes, sometimes we might get it wrong. We may not help the person. They become defensive, which is exacerbating it. But part of the reason why families sometimes want to have an intervention is because from a psychosocial point of view, we're all affected. So you might have a teenager who is at risk already behaving in an antisocial manner. I've got one of those in my family. And the family is feeling all sorts of feelings. Some aunts, some of us as siblings, mom might feel like, I let him down. I'm a bad mom. I wasn't a good older aunt. Someone else might think, this guy just needs a fat club. He needs to listen to me. So the whole family has to deal with that situation. And I guess some of us listen to the conversation, and I definitely include myself here, would never have thought about the idea of the family as a structure being able to either bring in a genie from the outside or going to a genie.
100%. So all is not lost. And I hear now we're moving away from...
Pardon the pun on Jeannie.
Your three wishes are granted. Okay, so all is not lost. There is a way out. And looking at family therapy is very effective. But what I want to say is that there is no teaching, only learning. And that comes from Monty Roberts, who's a natural horsemanship guru recently in the country. And what that means is that you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So if you focus rather on yourself as the person trying to help, focus on the strength of your communication, the quality of your communication, the strength of your relationships, that's where therapy can really assist a person. Remembering also with a person that can be said to be on the receiving end of the ineffective or the problematic behavior, I hate using the word, but let's call it the victim. Remember that protection is the opposite of support. As soon as you are moving to protect somebody, you actually disempower them from being able to solve their own problems. So let's say you're worried about your sister who's in a relationship with an abusive guy. Instead of focusing on an intervention with the abusive guy, focus on supporting your sister, empowering her, using your power of communication in that relationship so that she can effect the change that she needs to from the inside out.
Okay, put your headphones on for me. We're going to travel all the way to Boksburg. Hello, Sandy.
Yes, hello, Eusebius.
Thank you so much for calling. And go ahead.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. And up front, I must tell you that I'm rather emotional because you have touched an extremely problematic something that I have in my life. Just a quick synopsis. I have a very poor relationship currently with my son, and it's been going on for the last 3.5 years. And I have attempted through numerous channels to get help in the form of an intervention. I've asked family, my own family, to act as a mediator. And my brother doesn't want to do that because he feels that he would be biased in my favor. I have asked my own psychologist. He refused to do it because he said that obviously patient confidentiality and also the bias in my favor. I've asked friends. I approached SADC. I've approached Lifeline. And nowhere do I seem to be able to get somebody who is willing to step up and say, okay, fine, let's try this. And having said all of that, I must just add that my son doesn't believe that there's a problem. When you do try and talk to him, he gets extremely aggressive and he shuts down. He just closes off. It's not an issue, or I make him feel guilty about it.
Well, Sandy, the first thing I can say is I can hear you're suffering a lot, a lot.
Oh, you can't begin to believe.
I can hear it. I can hear you're really at the end of your tether, and you've looked for help everywhere, and you must be feeling really alone in all of this.
And he's the only child I have.
That's extremely painful. How old is your son?
38.
He's 38. Do you feel comfortable sharing with us a little bit of the difficulty?
A very short story. Him and his girlfriend had a baby. They asked me to give up my job and move from Natal and come to Johannesburg to help her look after the child because she was suffering with postnatal depression. All went well for 3 years, and then her and I had an argument, and it got quite ugly. She gave my son an ultimatum that either I had to leave or she was going to leave and take his son with her, and he would never get to see the child again. Needless to say, I got kicked out with nothing. I had no job, I had no income, and I sit today penniless. And he won't help me, and he won't talk to me. He wants nothing to do with me.
Sure, I can imagine how hurt and devastated you must be by all of this.
Well, I don't even get to see my grandson. She got my son to move away. They now live in Natal, and they've left me destitute in Joburg on my own.
You feel really left high and dry.
Absolutely.
I can hear that, and I can hear you don't feel supported by anybody else in this difficulty with your son. What would you like to see happening with your son? What for you is the outcome here?
I would like to be able to sit down with somebody, a mediator, and I would like him to tell me what it is that I've done so wrong that he wants to have nothing to do with me.
Oh, I can hear your pain and suffering. So my input to you, and I hope this is okay if we do this on air, but my input to you, Sandy, would be that I don't think your son is the correct channel here. I think your daughter-in-law is the correct channel for you to be following. As much as you love your son, I'm sure he feels the same about his little boy and feels very conflicted right now between a rock and a hard place. And I don't think an intervention is the way to go here. I think that mending the bridge with your daughter-in-law, as difficult and painful and frustrating as that must be, I don't know the full content of your difficulty there. But if you were to get a facilitator in, that would be the relationship in which I would focus. So my input would be to you, and like I say, I don't have full context, so I don't know if this is appropriate. But my input to you would be to see if there is a way that you can reach out to her and appeal to her as a mother with her own little boy. What would she feel like if she lost contact with her little boy one day, God forbid, and if she could maybe have some compassion for you, and if the two of you can't maybe try to sort something out. And then the two of you go together to a therapist. And a therapist, I just want to say, would be more a facilitator than a mediator. A mediator implies that there are two sides and the therapist is going to try and almost referee or umpire the match, but really facilitate effective communication, because in my clinical experience, 99% of problems between people are actually miscommunications and misunderstandings. Sandy, what are your thoughts on this?
I will do anything,
I can hear your desperation. I can hear how heartbroken you are.
Sandy, we'll see whether we can get you any further help and maybe get someone practically good. Play that facilitation role. I can hear you're devastated. I feel for you, and I want to thank you for sharing of that pain and journey you're going through.
It's very hard. It's very, very hard.
Mm. It's impossible, actually. It's really difficult. I can hear your loss and your grief on that side of the phone.
And I think that, you know, that's what I'm dealing with most. This is worse than a death.
It is.
Because they're there, you know they're there, but you can't get to them.
It's such a helpless feeling. Like I say, I would go with love and compassion and really just go with a gentle approach to your daughter-in-law and ask her, you know, woman to woman, without trying to rehash the past, just say, you know, I'm sorry for my share of what went wrong. I miss you guys terribly. My heart is broken. Is there any way we can build bridges? I'm even willing to do it on your terms. Because I can hear that whatever the fight was in the first place isn't worth
sure.
the loss and devastation that you're suffering with now.
Mm.
And I can hear you're a kind lady with a good heart. So I really, really just want to encourage you and send lots of love from this side.
Absolutely. Bernard, we're going to come to your call next. Thank you so much, Sandy.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
Let's go back to the lines. Bernard, thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Sylvester. It's Bernard here. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Bernard. Thanks for calling in. How can we help you?
Thanks for having me.
Jeannie is listening, so do continue.
I need to ask a question and perhaps just give me advice where to go. I'm divorced about 6 years back. My ex-wife and husband, domestic violence and also in front of the kids and so on. So about a week back, I got a court interdict. I took the kids. Now she's playing with them the whole time, you know, saying that how bad it is for her and she's lonely and she's crying and she's not eating. How do I approach it? Because she's a victim as well. With my kids was a victims as well that I got removed. And she cannot see that she's a victim. She cannot see how bad it was for the kids and that she cannot say this stuff. How do I approach it? What do I do? Do I refuse contact with a mother? How do I assist a mother to understand how serious the matter is and how bad it was for the kids?
Sure, Bernard, you've been through a lot, and I can imagine as a dad feeling extremely helpless and really wanting to assist your children and do the best by them.
I don't want to exclude the mother from their lives. But
100%.
To say this stuff every single time that she comes and visits, that disturbs the kids, and they cry. Now they say they feel guilty because they told me about it.
How old are your children?
The youngest is 10 and the eldest is 12, and it's two daughters. And they got to see how their mother was beaten, how even they got pushed around and everything. So how do I approach this thing? Do I refuse contact now because the mother keeps on saying this to the kids and trying to manipulate them and feeling bad? How do I get through to the mother because she says it's not as bad as it seems? She is not a victim. It's her fault that there was. She started the arguments. It's her fault and the kids' fault, and the kids are lying. It's not as bad.
Well, the first there's two things I'd like to respond to you, Bernard. The first one is that your ex-wife is probably very, very isolated, which is why she's speaking inappropriately to your children and using your children for emotional support. So if you are dedicated to assisting, the person that I would say you need to emotionally support right now is your ex-wife. I understand that she is your ex and that you cut that relationship for whatever reason there was, and divorces happen for a reason. But if she is going to stop speaking inappropriately and reaching out inappropriately, she will need a lot of emotional support. So either supporting her yourself or mobilizing some other support for her in her social system, in her network, in her environment. Victims of domestic violence are often extremely isolated. It's part of the abuser's modus operandi to isolate the person so that they aren't strong enough to leave, they don't tell anybody about what's going on. So my bet is that she's very isolated. She doesn't have anybody to talk to. So she speaks to her daughters, who lend a sympathetic ear and are willing to listen to mommy. And they're 10 and 12 now, so they're not babies anymore. They're probably very mature, having gone through what they've been through. And they seem like a wonderful resource to her to actually get some emotional support. But obviously, this is inappropriate. So that would be the first response, is to try and see if you can't support her yourself. Give her an ear to listen to her, or mobilize some other support, either through a friend, a relative, or some therapy would be ideal for her. The second one, if that is not possible, the second way would be what I said earlier, of protection is the opposite of support. So making that decision to cut your relationship off between the daughter, your daughters and their mother, is protection. And you're then disempowering your daughters from making that decision themselves one day when they're old enough. So support would be debriefing your daughters when they come home, giving them lots of empathy, working through that with them, getting them therapy, and focusing on supporting them rather than focusing on protecting them from their mother. Does that make sense?
It does. Like I said, you know, it's the second time she came to visit them, and the first time after it happened, and my kids was, my youngest especially, was hysterical. Yes. I said to her, please, it's not about your feelings, it's about what's best for the kids. You cannot dump this whole mess on them. That's been through enough already.
So 100%, 100%,
do the best for the kids.
100% agree with your logic, but let's look at the approach. The approach is then saying, okay, well, actually, and it, I just want to say I 100% agree, it's not appropriate for her to share this with your children, but inadvertently your approach might be isolating her even further. What about trying something like saying, sure, you know, it must have been really, really bad. You must be really suffering if you're reaching out to the girls. Can you and I rather talk about it? Or can I get you to see someone? It must be really, really difficult for you if you are reaching out to your daughters, who are obviously not mature enough to be able to help you. You must be feeling really alone. So in that, we're giving empathy rather than judgment. Mm. So she probably feels a really great amount of shame. That's the problem with domestic violence, is that the victim essentially ends up being the one who feels responsible and shameful. Like you said earlier, she said, no, the arguments were her fault. Mm. It really wasn't that bad. So she's carrying all this shame. So inadvertently, when you say, no, the girls aren't equipped, now she's got double whammy shame. Oh, no. I actually spoke out of turn. I'm making it more difficult for my daughters. And then she's going to get defensive. And then she's going to bottle it up even more. She's going to be more isolated. And she won't be able to even help herself of spilling it to your daughters whenever she sees them. And whenever she gets that sympathetic channel, she will spill. Mm. So that would be the other way of approaching it with her, is through lots and lots of empathy, that you care about her still as the mother of your children. You want what's best for everyone. You know, is there somebody that she can talk to on that side that you can help facilitate, or can she talk to you? Does that make sense, Bernard?
Yes, it does.
I hope it helps.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much.
Jeannie, we've got some interesting SMSs and tweets that kind of dovetail, so perhaps we can respond to them together. One SMS says, is there family intervention that's worthwhile for a parent with narcissistic personality disorder? Kindly please ask Jeannie. And then I have several tweets of the following kind. Here's a typical one. OG says, can you ask Sandy what's her take on handling a parent with an addiction or with narcissism?
Sure, narcissistic personality disorder is a very interesting one. So let's first just define what narcissism is. So narcissism is the complete lack of empathy. And empathy is the ability to see something from another person's perspective. So essentially, a narcissist is somebody that cannot see their own reflection, emotionally speaking. They cannot see how they look to other people, and they cannot understand the impact that their behavior has on another person. And it's very, very painful to be in a relationship with a narcissist, because they cannot see for themselves what they are doing to you. So they just carry on with their own agenda. Narcissists will often feel very frustrated and suffer a great deal emotionally because they aren't having success in their relationships. But they cannot see what their share is, because, like I say, they can't see themselves. They don't have an emotional reflection. And it's especially painful to be in a relationship with a narcissistic parent, having a parent that's a narcissist. Because if you think about a little person growing up, I always say the ideal childhood is like a little chicken inside an egg. The little chicken just absorbs all the nutrients from the environment and is protected by that shell. Mm. And when it comes time, they hatch and they go off and they do their own thing in life. But you see, a narcissistic upbringing with a narcissistic parent is that they are the little chicken and the child is the albumen around the chicken, and they are nurturing the parent. And of course, then the child doesn't get an opportunity to grow in an effective or a healthy way. So the short answer is it's very, very unlikely, if not impossible, for a truly narcissistic parent to take the feedback of an intervention and make any significant change. The best bet for you in terms of your time and your energy would be learning how to protect yourself, how to guard your resources, how to have a working relationship, if not an emotionally close relationship, but a working relationship with a narcissistic parent by protecting yourself.
A final question, Jean, as we wrap up. My heart breaks for our first caller we've had today.
Myself.
What are the limits? I mean, obviously, we are optimistic. I love the deep empathy that you are proselytizing and not having a sort of blame culture. But let's imagine that there's, to use legalese, an irretrievable breakdown relationship between mom and daughter-in-law, for example. In reality, and you were clear about this during the ad break that you and I chatted a bit, you know, there are also hard truths here. What are the limits in terms of what this kind of methodology can do for a family going through someone who really doesn't want to drink the proverbial horse that you were talking about?
So I am a firm believer in the power of people and people's inherent potential for self-actualization. So I believe that there is always hope. But to be maybe a little bit glib, I'd say it's 92%, because 8% of the population is either a sociopath or a narcissist. So if you're dealing with a sociopath or a narcissist, a sociopath is somebody who doesn't have empathy but also doesn't have a conscience. So they don't ever feel bad. A narcissist will at least feel bad. They won't understand why, but they will feel bad about what's going on. If you're dealing with that 8% of the population, then the chances are that there won't be any hope. And your best bet is in learning how to protect yourself and protect your resources. Otherwise, I really do believe that with empathy, unconditional positive regard, which is not a non-blame culture, and believing in the true potential of people, that anything can happen.
Tamba says on Twitter, "You see, as a person is a complex being, I sometimes believe the society is just waiting for a person to do wrong, then the judgment comes in." And that's precisely why one of the things you've warned again, and maybe we'll unpack it more fully the next time, I hope you will come on because you've been fabulous.
Thank you.
Is why, for example, the tough love messaging of the 1990s is rightly so passé, because it doesn't take into account that complete psychosocial context within which these problems and challenges in our individual lives arise.
100%. If you have a healthy relationship, then anything can happen. But the tough love approach is really rejecting, and there's a reason why we don't see the tough love approach around anymore. Now we look at rather support the person, not the problem. So if you don't have that relationship, you don't have the channel to effect change. So really, it's about nurturing relationships rather than about focusing on and attacking problems.
Well, and then thank you so much for coming in, Jeannie. But this lovely tweet here, I have to agree with it. Felicity says, "What a fantastically calm, clear voice this woman has. Just listening to her talking is therapy in itself."
Oh, thank you very much, Felicity.